for the invite.
Yeah, so we don't have Derek with us tonight. He couldn't join us. He's not feeling so hot this evening. So we're gonna have a conversation, just the two of us, and he'll be back next week. But yeah, how was your week?
It was good. I was looking forward to doing nothing, but I was reminded that I have to go to Memphis. And then I have to come right back the same day. So I did that Saturday. It was a good time. Got to see family, helped a niece move. And
nice.
Got some I got some wings from a good spot, a really good spot down there. It'll come back to me later.
Yeah.
But that's what they're known for, right?
Good
wings.
Right.
So, but yeah, so we're here now. I'm glad to be back under the lights, you know.
right. Back on stage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. How about you?
I thought I was going to get to stay in town, but I ended up going to Birmingham. So we drove down to Birmingham last week. We were only there for 2 days. So
okay.
We went in for a couple of Christmas parties. We did a Dirty Santa party. And then we did Friday night. That was Thursday night. On Friday night, we did a murder mystery party. Have you ever done one of those?
No.
It was wild.
I don't think so. I'm kind of old, so I might have.
Right. No, it was fun. We there were about, I guess, 14 or 15 of us. And we dressed up as characters in this murder mystery.
Okay.
And it was a whodunit type thing. So you read through the story, the dialogue and everything, and everybody goes around, and the whole time you're trying to figure out who the murderer is. And it was a lot of fun.
Love it.
It was a good time. So I dressed up as a character, a Joe Woodsmith character. It was I wore coveralls, like, you know, some tan coveralls and a flannel shirt and a tool belt and all that stuff. It was, I was in the right place to get the outfit down in Alabama, because it was definitely Alabama attire. So, but yeah, it was a good time.
Fun.
So we had a lot of fun.
Fun times. But did you stop at Bucky's though?
No, I didn't this time. No, I've gotten tired of stopping at Bucky's. Every time I go in, I spend $150 and it's just getting, you know, it's like, do I feel like, so as I'm passing it now, it's like, do I feel like stopping and donating to Bucky's?
True. Yeah. So I found out about Bucky's through, there's a comedy show I watch. Actually, it airs every Monday.
Yeah.
Which happens to be today.
Nice.
I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
Not sure.
It's Kill Tony.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So obviously, you probably know the reference there. Mm-hmm. One of the comedians used to work at Bucky's. And
I didn't know that. No, I haven't. I've only seen a couple of them. I'm familiar with it, but I haven't seen it. So.
Okay.
Yeah. I've never watched a full episode of it or something.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's my Monday ritual.
Nice.
That's what I would be doing right now.
So that's what we're interrupting tonight.
I mean,
Thanks for deviating from your schedule.
No, but I mean, I'll watch it later tonight or maybe tomorrow morning.
Sure.
You know, so, but it's a great time. But there's all this anticipation that's been building for years to go to Bucky. So when I went, I spent $120. Exactly. Yep.
That sounds right. That's right. That's like, it's like I remember back in the day when we would jokingly call Starbucks $5 and now it's $10. So, man. You know, because you can't get in and out with that. If you just go buy a coffee, it's $10.
Crazy.
But, well, I mean, I think it's more than coffee at this point. It's an American pastime of some sweet sugar caffeine concoction.
It's part of our problem.
Yeah. Right. Everybody running around wired up on caffeine all the time.
But, yep. And sugar.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's wow.
Yeah, man.
Amazing.
High fructose corn syrup. It changed the world.
Changed the world.
Right. But yeah, it's been a good week. We did Christmas and everything, obviously, and so got a chance to see family. There's always a certain amount of stress leading into the holidays, and I say stress. I mean, I'm not a particularly high stress individual, but it's just sort of knowing that there's a performative element to having to run through the whole holiday thing. And I should not be complaining. I shouldn't sound like I'm complaining, because I'm not. It's not a negative thing. I just there's a lot. We have a large family, and so it usually involves migrating to at least three or four different locations with kids and dog in tow. And so it's, again, I don't want to complain about being incredibly fortunate to have such a, bountiful life. So I'm not trying to overlook the blessings we have in life, you know, type situation.
Oh,
but yeah, it was good. We didn't have to travel during, you know, the Christmas holidays. So that normally we're bouncing between cities, and it's always pretty hectic. Like we'll do Christmas Eve in Birmingham and then drive all the way back to Nashville that night to do Christmas morning here in Nashville, and then go out to, you know, about an hour and a half away to parents' house to do Christmas day afternoon and evening out at their house, and then come back and usually trade kids and then drive back down to Birmingham. It's usually just
a lot.
It's a lot.
It's a lot.
It is.
So yeah, I mean, it's especially most of us are homebodies, or we work from home. We don't usually go. We usually have everything we want at our fingertips, but now got to get outside of the house, and you're crossing state lines.
Mm-hmm.
That's not easy. Yeah. You know.
Have you ever driven through Alabama?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not to disparage an entire state, but they need to learn how to build roads. Their roads are subpar. That you can tell when you cross the Tennessee line from Tennessee into Alabama that they just don't fund their roads the way that Tennessee does, because all of a sudden there's potholes everywhere. And honestly, if you're from Alabama, I apologize in advance, because I don't know. I get really annoyed by Alabama drivers. They don't in Tennessee, we have the slower traffic move, you know, stay right rules. Mm-hmm. So left lanes for passing on the interstate. Alabamans just don't care. They give zero craps, right? They're just, and so you'll end up stuck behind somebody for 10 miles just because they don't feel like moving. And it definitely makes me appreciate Tennessee and Nashville and the way that traffic has evolved to progress. So,
yeah.
You know, of course, Nashville, everything's at 95 miles an hour anyway, but, you know, kind of like Atlanta, but
yeah.
We drive through Alabama quite a bit, whether we're going to Alabama or down to Florida. So we usually make probably 10, 12 trips a year. So
wow. Okay. Yeah. Back in college, I used to drive through Alabama a lot.
Yeah.
So I would imagine, I don't remember the roads being too bad, but it's been a long time. It's been about 20 years.
Right.
But well,
there's also in the middle of Birmingham, they've done, locals call it Malfunction Junction, which I'm sure most people have some intersection somewhere that they refer to that way. But this one truly is just, it's a mess. It looks accidental. It's a ton of bridges and overpasses that come and intersect one another. You have to go south to get north. It's just not intuitive in any way.
It's like it was an afterthought.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, even with the GPS running, if you're not paying attention to which lane the GPS is telling you to be in, you're going to go the wrong way. So it's very, it's tricky to.
It's like a cup holder in a BMW.
Right.
They didn't think about this until later.
Right. Like, oh, we can put those in there. Yeah. But no, so it's good to be home for sure.
Yeah.
But, well, so this week has been interesting. We were looking at different articles and stuff a little bit ago. What have you noticed this week? Just because I don't really have an agenda to get into. I figured we could just kind of talk about stuff. What's on your mind?
So did the drone issue just disappear?
Right.
Like, no one's talking about it anymore.
Right.
Did they fix that?
I haven't heard about it. I remember. Did you ever hear, because I heard some people claiming to know what those were. Did you hear about that as well?
I did hear stories about subject matter experts.
Yeah, people that were DOD employees saying, you know, I recognize those. They are definitely nuclear detection drones, which I guess gives an explanation as to why the government wouldn't want to just come out and say that they belong to them. Because if they're looking for nukes that have been reported missing or been lost, then they probably don't want to answer the how do you lose nukes question and why do you think there are nukes in New Jersey question type, you know?
It's like a a magician who obviously doesn't want to reveal what the trick is.
Right.
But we see that you kind of messed up your trick and you don't want to explain.
Right.
So.
Or pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Right.
And then I saw the clip where Trump mentioned that they know what it is and they don't understand why they just don't come out and just explain.
Right. Did you see that? I didn't see that. Interesting. That's a good question, though. It's a real good question. Like I said, I think my best guess is something along the lines of they don't want to say we are looking for dirty bombs in the New Jersey, Pennsylvania area, because
I've my parents have seen them here in Nashville.
Nashville?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
Really?
So apparently they're popping up everywhere. My dad's really into UFOs, so I have some of his footage. I can probably
that's awesome.
Maybe I can share it with you. I don't know. We'll,
that's awesome.
We might consider putting it up or something. But,
okay, yeah.
But he's talking to it like it's a UFO.
No, yeah, I want to hear about this. So tell me. So your dad's. You said my dad's into UFOs. Tell me about this. That's interesting.
Yeah. So ever since Close Encounter, when I was a kid, my dad bought me a keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
You know. I thought it was for me, but he pulled it out of the package and started playing the Close Encounter. You know, the da-da-da-da. Mm-hmm. I mean, sorry, I can't sing.
I got you.
But that's the first melody that I actually keyed on the keyboard because he...
Nice. So that was really why he wanted to get the keyboard.
That's why he wanted to get the keyboard.
That's funny. No, that's wild. I didn't realize that there had been drone sightings anywhere else other than the East Coast. So, wow.
But see, my dad, he kind of lives in a just outside of too far out of the outside of Nashville to where he has to call a private service to get his trash.
Sure.
So there's not a lot of street lights. So he's always being an enthusiast. Mm-hmm. If you were to go into my parents' home, my mom's gonna have on Ancient Aliens.
Nice. Back,
and she's been playing this show for.
Awesome.
10 years.
Like, that's awesome.
How many new stories do y'all have?
Right. The guy with the tall hair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, exactly. I forget his name.
So,
that's great.
But yeah. So.
That's awesome, man. That's great. I've never. Yeah. I would probably like hanging out at your house. That sounds incredible. Yeah. So, drones in the Scotts Hollow area of Nashville. We've lived here 28 years, and no, they're not supposed to be lights back there. that's like one of the guy that I knew it was a tornado when I looked over the trailer and saw, you know, the clouds getting real dark. No, and we see a lot of that here in Tennessee. Said the aircrafts were moving in a grid-like system and would quickly dart from one direction to another. I'm not sure what I saw, but it was interesting. Huh. So, yeah. So, wow. I didn't realize they'd been seen this close.
I've never heard of Scotts Hollow. Where is
that? I have no idea. Yeah. I don't know. Scotts Hollow. It is in Davidson County. Wow. Okay. That's Nashville area then. So, over on Lebanon Pike.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
That's also right next to the airport. I mean, well, not right next to it, but it's within a couple of miles of the airport of Nashville of BNA.
Well, let me show you the region that my parents.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not gonna show exactly where. But basically, this part of Nashville here.
Okay, north side.
Yep, north side. Yep. So.
Nice.
Since they told me and then it hit the news, I've been trying to look as well, but I haven't seen any. But
yeah,
he my dad has footage. So
nice. Okay. Well, yeah, definitely. You ought to send me that. It sounds interesting. Well, so there was that. But you're right. I haven't heard more about it. News wise, let's see. We've got, the border wall. So what did you see the news story with regard to, and I don't know if it was specifically the Biden administration or if it was Homeland Security, but that they were selling off the unused materials for the border wall.
Yes.
Prior to the transition in January, which just blows my mind.
It's ridiculous.
I can't I just can't understand what, I mean, are they just trying to make it more expensive or trying to make it impossible? Like, apparently there was a, they put it up for auction and sold it for pennies on the dollar, which we, I'm sure we paid full price for it originally. And so it was sold for pennies on the dollar. Apparently one of the contractors contacted either Bush, I mean, either Trump or his team and said that they would sell it back. They're like, look, we'll sell it back for what we paid for it. So apparently some people are at least saying, okay, you know, but still, but just being willing to, I just don't get the adversarial nature. Like, we're not all on the same team.
Yeah. I mean, how are we supposed to get things done?
I know.
So you have one administration with their whole set of agendas, and then you have the other. But if we are building up solutions or systems and then the next administration hacks it down, I mean, what is the purpose of having this political structure?
I know. And I also know that's a lot of the challenge with some of the some other countries when they consider dealing with us, is the idea that every 4 years the captain of the ship can change and the agendas can change and we can, you know, policies can be just reversed and we can go the exact opposite direction. It's a challenge that I don't know. That's been part of my challenge with the entire political landscape in the first place, is the idea that we have become so polarized that it's almost like we're not even on the same team anymore. You know, this adversarial nature, this adversarial attitude of the other side is so diametrically opposed to everything I stand for that, and it begins with I just don't agree with them, and it ultimately culminates to I hate them, and, you know, and eventually what, we go to war? Do we fight? I mean, is it, are we willing to kill each other? It's just it's a dangerous slope to find yourselves on, and I definitely wonder how we can backtrack from the precipice that we seem to be marching toward. And I think it may be happening to a degree. It kind of feels like there's a I don't know if movement's the right word, but it feels like attitudes are changing to a degree, that the country's on board with the idea of reform and change, and let's correct some of the problems. Let's find the low-hanging fruit. Let's knock it out, and let's see what we can do to make progress. Which, that's a much better stance than just filibustering as long as you can, trying to keep the other side from making any progress. Just, it's the right hand fighting the left hand, and it's never made much sense to me. But I don't know. It's the times we find ourselves in is what it seems like.
Yeah, it reminds me of you get in your car because you need to go somewhere, but before you do, you jack the power end up.
Mm-hmm.
So you can press the gas pedal all you want. You're going to burn a lot of fuel, but...
Mm-hmm. Not going anywhere.
You're not going anywhere.
Right. Or you pop all the tires. Or you sabotage the car somehow. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. We can't fight each other. We're on the same team, and that's something I think we have to find a way to deal with.
And that reminds me, there's a footage of Reagan talking about what would unite us all,
mm-hmm.
and he's talking about
mm-hmm.
a external threat.
Mm-hmm.
What if the drones are the external threat?
You right.
know what I mean? What if those are really aliens disguised as drones?
Right.
I mean,
I've always liked the way he said that too. He said it as, he said something to the effect of, if we woke up tomorrow and there were ships in orbit, right? There was a craft orbiting our planet. All of a sudden, Chinese people wouldn't look that different, and Russian people wouldn't look that different, right? Black people and white people wouldn't seem that different if a insectoid, if alien climbs out of a ship and says, "You work for me now." So it's a relevant point. You know, we're not that different.
So what if the aliens are like, "Yo, we here,"
right?
You know, we are an external threat. Y'all need to get it together,
right? Well, I mean, you've seen the Tic Tac videos, right? I mean, we don't know what it is. It's not likely that it's some subversive Chinese technology or some, you know, it's, we don't know what those are. We've got tons of aerial phenomenon. I think we call them UAPs now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's tons of stuff. It occurs every day in our airspace that we can't explain. The drones, at least there seems to be, you know, the government's kind of tipping its hand, in my opinion, by saying, you know, it's not a threat. It's not something we have to worry about. In other words, they're saying we know what it is, or we know what it's not, which that's what I think gives credence to the idea that they're trying to search for bombs. But still, the idea that they've got drones looking for bombs in Tennessee, I mean, are we really worried they're dirty bombs floating around the interior of the country like that? I mean, is that a possibility?
So what was concerning? So I kind of use Google Maps to triangulate where my dad saw the drone or the UFO. Mm. And there was Briley Parkway, but then there's also a AT&T cell tower. Mm-hmm. So it made me wonder, and it was around that area for several days, for a couple weeks, just showing up. And it just made me wonder, is something taking a note of our communications infrastructure? Hmm. You know what I mean? To potentially, I don't know, cripple communication across the U.S.? I mean, maybe I'm reading too far into it, but it's like nothing right there other than the cell tower.
Yeah. Well, that's a subject you and I could actually speak to, because we've spent our careers in technology. And really all you need to do that is an internet connection these days, right? You don't need physical proximity anymore. That was part of the challenge with the hacks that the hacks that China was accused of doing recently. I don't remember if it was Homeland Security or I don't remember who it was that said, or FBI that said that it was China behind them. But if they really have found back doors and exposed back doors into our telecommunications networks, that's concerning. And that's concerning for a number of reasons, because if they had access to, say, infrastructural systems like dams, you know, power generation facilities, pipelines, things like that, which we've already had circumstances where things like vulnerabilities in those areas have been exposed with the pipeline issue we had a few years ago. And if they were able, you know, someone like China, who has been developing an AI system to track people, right? China runs, and we've got someone coming in from China that we're going to be talking about this here in the next week or two. But China has a social credit system that, you know, if you live in one of the major cities, when you step outside the front door, you're on camera. You're being tracked everywhere you go, and it's running facial recognition algorithms against you. So it knows who you are, where you are. If you were to go down to the corner market, and as you're checking out, you get angry and you yell at someone, your social credit score goes down. And if your social credit score goes down below a certain threshold, you can't go to the movies. You can't buy vending things from the vending machines. You can't get luxury items. If it goes down far enough, you can't buy, and I don't know how far they take it, but it's the idea of incentivizing good behavior and acting appropriately. And
sounds like Infamous.
Well, it's video game. Very, very 1984, right? Like just a very dystopian. But the reason I mention it is because these systems are developed and being used daily. If those systems were let into our telecom systems and into our public infrastructure systems that have a camera on every red light in the city, and were to start saying, I want to correlate data for, let's say, 500 people. There are 500 targets that I want to correlate information for, and I want to track, using their cell phone, their geolocation data. I want to track where they go, when they go there, how often they're there, and what their movement pattern is. And I want to correlate it through all these different systems, through the traffic systems, through the cameras on the courthouse public systems. That's problematic, because if they have access, that's dangerous. That's the way you conduct or plan at least a zero-day attack, where you shut the lights out, you shut the infrastructure down right before you attack, right? That strikes me as planning for doomsday, I guess, or for attack. And so that's my concern where that stuff comes in, at least, is how vulnerable are we? Do we know how vulnerable we are? And what steps are we taking to mitigate that risk?
Yeah. And so that's what our government leads us to do, is to speculate, because they're not telling us anything.
Right.
If they would tell us, we wouldn't have all these theories.
Yeah.
And speculate.
Yeah, well, and it makes sense. They can't tell us everything. I mean, I get that. I get they don't want us to know everything they know. But, I mean, like the telecom leaks, that stuff, that telecom hack, that information came from them, right? That was them saying, this is what occurred. And so, and if that's just the tip of the iceberg, if, you know, what are they not telling us? If that's what they're willing to share, you know, what don't we know? But, yeah. That's speculation. I'm not interested in speculating. It's concerning because we are in a different day and age now with the advent of AI.
And, absolutely.
And it's, and a lot of, you know, again, this is an area that you and I can speak to, that a lot of, I feel like I've been saying for years, and as I've talked to people in different industries, I feel like this is something a lot of people didn't understand appropriately. They always, and I'm going to say we colloquially here because this, I think that's the situation we're in now. We looked at AI and it's we sort of assumed it would follow all the patterns that innovation has followed throughout the history of mankind. We assumed that first it would take the low difficulty jobs, and it would work its way up into the medium difficulty jobs, and ultimately it would have, you know, be able to do the more complex jobs. The problem is we didn't anticipate the fact that when AI actually arrived, the difference between, say, a truck driver and a neurosurgeon would be so minimal, it would be so small that by the time it could do one, it could do both. Right. We had this hubristic idea of our own capabilities. We thought we were so competent and so intelligent that the idea that it would not take that much intelligence to not just equal but then surpass us never even occurred to us. And now that we see it, it's like, okay, so we aren't that complex, we aren't that intelligent, and it is easy for us to be usurped, right? It is easy for us to be surpassed on an intelligence level. And I think that's a very real issue that we have to find a way to contend with today, because we might be looking at the first generation of young people in the country, in the world, that will graduate to a job market that they can't compete in because so much of it's going to be automated that we're going to have to deal with issues like, is our economic infrastructure up to the task of handling a situation where most people can't professionally compete with automation and with systems that can do their job, you know, a lot faster and a lot more efficiently than they can. So it's food for thought.
Yeah. It's got me thinking about the whole H-1B situation.
Mm-hmm.
So you called out the fact that AI is pretty much going to make systems more efficient, right? Mm-hmm. Less people are needed. But with the H-1B situation where, you know, initially Trump in his first term, he sort of restricted or did away with it. And now since he's got elected the second term and he's got Elon and Vivek, who were both beneficiaries of this H-1B visa situation,
mm-hmm.
he likes it. And, I mean, I don't have a problem with it. We've been in IT for years. We know the mix of cultures and diversity that is involved with IT, right?
Mm-hmm. Why don't you explain it? Why don't you articulate the issue?
Yeah, so basically...
if you don't mind.
And there's a couple things, right? So there's key... things that we all understand about the H-1B situation. Mm-hmm. One in particular is that it wants to make it easier so that foreign... Sorry, I'm fidgeting with stuff.
You're fine.
But basically, it's going to be beneficial for international people who are skilled in a trade that we might want here in the U.S. So
right.
we're just basically opening up opportunity for essentially everyone. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's no different than the NBA, NFL. Mm-hmm. When they recruit, they want to open up recruitment for anyone mm-hmm. who could possibly fit the systems that or the team that they want to build, basically, right? So mm-hmm. open it up to everyone. So
is the idea of fast-tracking an immigration process for people who have a desirable trait or skill?
Yes, people who are driven, who are willing to make the sacrifice to uproot, come overseas,
right,
and become a subject matter expert in the trade. Yeah, come, please do come. Join our team so that we can build a successful,
right.
thriving economy.
Right.
So, but the thing is, the way Vivek and Elon are sort of elaborating about it,
mm-hmm.
they are not really being, I guess, sensitive to the wording that they're using, because mm-hmm. they're making it seem like, well, it's set. It was presented as if Americans are not as qualified mm-hmm. as Indians or other people overseas.
Right.
And that's not the case at all. It is simply that they want to increase the pool of good talent
sure.
to everyone around the globe
sure.
so that we can get the best of the best in here.
Sure. That makes sense. That makes sense. And so are they proposing that we should modify the H-1B visa program? Is that the gist of it?
Well, it seems like the people who are against it are claiming racism, you know. So they kind of looking at it as sort of hypocritical because they want to get rid of the whole DEI situation,
mm-hmm.
but then they are clearly opening it up for brown skinned folk
mm-hmm.
to come aboard, to come into U.S. to take jobs that U.S. citizens should be able to take, which they are able to take.
Mm-hmm.
The opportunity's there. It's just we want to pull from the entire globe.
Right. And I would hope that wouldn't be considered on a color of skin issue,
well,
personally, but
you know, that's what they tend to do. The people who want to
right.
find issue are going to find something. And
right.
Oftentimes it's race. It's just race. They don't think
right.
about culture. You know, who's driven to make a change.
Right.
Right. It's a lot of it. Some of these people, so they look at U.S. citizens as having it bad, and that the U.S. is the worst place in the world to live. But a lot of these people, if you would take the time to look into where they come from and the sort of situations, political, racial, financial, economic, there's a whole lot of there's all sorts of different things that people around the world are contending with that we are fortunate to not have to deal with.
Right.
So there's a lot to unpack. It's not just race.
Yeah, and it looks like I've heard it described saying that there aren't, this is it right here, Musk saying there aren't enough super talented engineers in the U.S. Ron Swamy's lengthy post on X, formerly Twitter, argued that tech companies need foreign workers because Americans don't have good enough work ethic and that American culture venerated mediocrity over excellence.
See, that's the part. So he could have left that out.
Yeah.
But still had this thing.
Still made the point.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. For specialized foreign workers to legally work in the U.S., they must be sponsored by employers and approved. Tech companies, financial institutions, and universities are often more frequent sponsors. Google, Meta, Amazon, and other major companies dominate the market, each receiving several thousand visas. Let's see. Professionally, personally. Yeah. So yeah, it sounds like they're saying that we don't. And I can see where this would be like looked at in a hypocrisy, from a hypocrisy standpoint, saying that, because when you consider it, say, next to the deportation discussion, but we're not talking about the same thing, right? We're talking
right.
about people who are coming here legally and immigrating with a desirable skill or trade to work for a specific company. I heard Trump mention something about considering the idea that maybe if when people graduate, if they graduate with a degree, offering them an H-1B status so that they can innovate and start companies and work here.
Right.
I think things like that are a great idea. I really hope that we don't have a large group of people that are looking at it from a specifically from a race standpoint. That strikes me as absolutely absurd. But, you know, I would hope we're not that naive. But
well, that rhetoric comes from the top.
Yeah. You think so?
Oh, I know so.
Yeah.
I've watched way too many commencement speeches, Biden.
Yeah. Morehouse.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. I mean, saw that one.
Come on, bro.
That was a lot. That was a lot.
Yeah. You're basically saying, okay, no one likes you guys.
Right.
You need me.
Yeah.
To make them like you.
Yeah. And you love a country that doesn't love you back. Yeah. That was some strategery right there. I couldn't believe. Yeah. I'm not going to get into that. That was a lot.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I've been a Democrat most of my life. At this point now, I'm an adult. I have to make adult decisions.
Right.
I know BS when I hear it.
Yeah.
Like, I've been, you know, it's letting the BS fly has traumatized me, which is why I can't.
Yeah.
I can't, you know, if I see it, I have to call it out. And so I had to switch. I had to jump over here.
Yeah. Yeah, that was it for me, too, was I've always been considered myself. First of all, I've always been a moderate, very moderate, but I always considered myself like a social liberal and a fiscal conservative. So it was always, but those things are strike me as hierarchical in nature, right? If you don't have finances in order, you can't argue over what you have for dinner, right? You have to prioritize effectively. So the first thing we do is get the budget balanced and get the economy squared away and get the foundations taken care of. Then we can talk about the way that we enjoy the security that's provided by the secure foundation. It's sort of like you shore up the border, you protect the border, and then once we have the border under control and we can actually start making changes that impact things internally. But yeah, and I haven't changed that much. I'm still very moderate, right? It's not me that changed. It's the line that moved around me, and it has abandoned me into the right. I'm in the right now just because, and again, I'm still standing in the same place. I'm still looking at things very similarly. Not that much. I haven't changed on that much, except who I believe and who I'm willing to listen to. That's the main thing. The main thing that's changed.
Your bullshit detector has been greatly upgraded.
Yes.
You know what you're saying.
That's right.
You know what you don't want to see.
That's right.
Now, I think it's funny. One of my ex-fiancés, maybe I shouldn't say that. Well, we'll leave that
You can say that. There's nothing wrong with that.
But
you don't have to say the name.
So I remember she lived in New York, and I remember I was about to move to New York. But anyway, when it came to Trump, she loved Trump. Mm-hmm. Like, just was always talking about Trump, how she loves him. Mm-hmm. At that time, she was in the pageantry system, so you know he was as well. So, but as soon as he jumped into the political arena, she hates the man.
Yeah,
I'm like, what happened? Hmm. Like I remember you saying these specific things about how you love him.
Right.
And it's political. He's not on your team anymore.
Right.
That's what it is. He's not a part of your tribe.
Right.
And you can't deal with that.
Right. Right. So it's us and them.
Yeah. Yeah. So you have these biases that you're allowing into your mind. And it's crazy. Like we went back and forth on Instagram, her texting why I should and shouldn't vote for him.
Mm-hmm.
And she accused me of attacking her.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, just scroll up. You'll see all of the stuff. Right.
It's written down.
You attacked me. You got it.
Right.
You reversed it.
Right.
You did a uno reverse on me. But I don't know. I mean, I get it. I want the team to win, but my team is a Team America.
Yes.
Team World.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah.
But I think that a large part of American population just hasn't had that international exposure. They don't know what a difficult life is. Well, we all have our relative difficult lives, but if you take a moment to just peer into life around the world, in just any place, just look how different it is.
Yeah,
travel there, pay attention to the political structures, the prisons, how good or bad the prisons are.
Mm-hmm.
What sort of reform process they have for prisoners? You know, just mm-hmm. look at a lot of different things.
Yeah,
and then we can talk.
Yeah,
because otherwise,
yeah,
you know, we don't have any common ground, I guess.
You're right. Go to a country where they don't obey traffic laws. It's eye opening, right? If there are countries out there where red lights are optional, right? And it's different. It's taking your life into your hands just to drive to the right. grocery store.
Yep.
But it's not that it's not here. It's just different. There's a different view, a different outlook. And it's sort of a whether the average person you run into is interested in the communal good, in the communal contract, the social contract, where we all contribute to this being a better society. That's something that I think exists in the U.S. whether some people want to acknowledge it or not, or notice it or not. It's this, you know, a lot of people are, and we may be a little biased to this, have a little bit of a different experience here in Nashville. But, you know, when you meet people out in the grocery store, as you pass people, by and large, people are kind, you know, holding doors for people, helping people out. If somebody drops something, somebody's going to stop and help them. It's just it's different. There are countries where you have to walk around with your hand over your wallet, and you have to lock things in your trunk before you leave your vehicle, or it's getting that way in some places in this country, I guess, at this point, right? There are places where people leave their windows down because they don't want their car to get broken into. So I feel like I've seen something about that recently, but it definitely travel will open your eyes. That's for sure. It's very different.
For sure.
So, yeah. But, let's see, we talked about, here we go. So this is stuff that's like on the fringe, that's not necessarily in mainstream news reports, but GOP voters support military detaining migrants in the U.S. Let's see, how about this side? U.S. credit card defaults jumped to the highest level since 2010. Israel at UN warns Houthis risk sharing the same fate as Hamas and Hezbollah. And that's just going, man, that.
I do want to see what's going on with Tom Homan, how mm-hmm. he responded to critics.
Yeah. So it says he criticized Jasmine Crockett after she stated he was in over his head. Homan claimed, "I forgot more about immigration than she'll ever know." The exchange shows tensions regarding immigration issues between Homan and Crockett. Homan's remarks indicated a defensive position to Crockett's criticism.
I want to see that footage. You mind pulling that up,
sure.
Jasmine?
So let's see. Let's do this. Border enforcement. Okay. Doesn't like that, huh? Too specific, I guess.
Click on videos.
You can look at, yeah, that's what I just did, but you mean these?
Well, no, you clicked on news at first.
Oh, I see. Yeah, see, it's acting like it's too specific. Watch, Tom, let's do this. Just
look up, I think her name's Jacqueline Crockett, I believe.
It's not finding anything. Okay, let's try this. It's all right. I'll pull it. So let's see. This is MSNBC, which means they're going to slam us with ads.
What about YouTube?
Yeah, let's do it.
YouTube, the source of truth.
Yeah, right? Is it Holman?
H-O-M-A-N.
It's a minute 31.
A quick question, and I want to make one quick statement. I find it very offensive that anybody...
That's 2019. So this is
a
month
literally
ago.
A day.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for.
Tom Holman Crockett. Yeah, type for that. Search for that. H-O-M-A-N.
See, that still says AOC, and we're still at a month ago. What was her name, Jasmine? Oh,
yeah.
H-O-L.
H-O-M-A.
Yeah. Is that right, H-O-M?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, there we go. Holman, Jasmine.
Where is the footage?
Expect mass protests in response to mass deportation?
I do, but I also don't expect mass deportation.
It's 15 minutes long. Let's see.
I think this one right here.
This one?
Yeah, that's the one. That's the latest.
Joining us now is Congresswoman Jasmine Crockett, Democrat from Texas and member of the Oversight and Agricultural Committees. All right, Congresswoman, when you hear those remarks, what are your initial thoughts?
Again, we have someone who doesn't know what he's doing. And, you know, this idea of, oh, you know, you're illegal and then you go out and have a child. It's not quite that simple, especially when you have people that are doing things like seeking asylum and people that are saying, listen, I'm just trying to make sure that I can live a better life here in the United States. And I want to do everything that I can to become an American citizen or at least get some sort of legal status. And you have, you know, Trump that goes out there, him and his minions, and they say things like, you know what, we're only going to get rid of the bad ones, right? And so people sit there and they're like, wait a minute, you're going to come to my job where I'm working and I may be paying into taxes or whatever, or my kids are at school.
Well,
you know, I think that there's going to be a...
Well,
yeah. So she's completely overstepping a lot of things. I mean, obviously we want constructive people to add to the economy, to work, to build up the country. But there's a process that they have to go through. There's a lot of people who don't like the U.S.
Yeah, sure.
And they are looking to get into the U.S. by any means necessary. If the border's open, they can just walk in.
Mm-hmm.
Why not? Let's walk in. Let's get together. If there's any risk for the country, our borders being open is one of the biggest ones.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it has to do with our meddling in foreign affairs. Like, people are hurt. They mm-hmm. want to hurt us back.
Mm-hmm.
We do have an infrastructure that is, from what I've seen, at risk, you know, potentially could cripple the whole economy.
Mm-hmm.
Everything, the whole entire infrastructure. We all depend on electricity, you know. There's a
right.
lot of risk at hand here. So we want the same things you want, Ms. Crockett.
Mm-hmm.
We do. We want all of them to thrive and be able to raise families. But
right.
you got to do it the right way. We need to know who you are.
Right, and whether they're contributing to taxes is irrelevant. It's a matter of, like, we wouldn't say, okay, yeah, look, I mean, you killed somebody, but as long as you're paying your taxes, I guess it's okay. You know, yes, you committed murder, or yes, you robbed a bank, but as long as you pay taxes and work hard, that's not the point. The point is that we have laws for a reason, and we have a process by which you can immigrate. And that immigration process, like you said, is put in place with the intention of vetting out people who would be good candidates to be in this country. The reason there's only a few reasons you wouldn't go through that process, and that's if you don't want to take the time, you don't have the patience, you know, And if it's something where you're escaping, like seeking asylum situation, we have a process for that. But even then, we can't offer asylum to the entire world, right? That's just not feasible. There are plenty of countries where there's civil unrest and where there's political unrest and military aggression occurring. There's plenty of atrocities occurring all across the globe. We can't let that be the only reason you come in. Now, in extreme circumstances, we make exceptions. But the idea that just as long as we can't go to these people who are paying taxes, that's not a good selection criteria. I mean, most importantly is if they're not citizens, if they don't have Social Security, they're not contributing to the public infrastructure in the way that they would be consuming just by using the roads, by using the judicial system, by using the healthcare system. And so I don't like this idea that they're not doing anything wrong by seeking a better life. Yes, they're seeking a better life, but they did it in an illegal way. And so that has to be recognized and that has to be accounted for, in my opinion.
Exactly. Absolutely.
But yeah, that was, did you see what you wanted to see on that one?
I mean, I do want to let the whole thing play so
okay,
I can understand,
we'll
but it's just
we'll it.
So much was up.
No, I got you.
I feel like
we
I
can stop it again if we need to.
Really on all sides. There's also to me the idea that vulnerable women without access to health care or birth control may or may not be choosing whether or not they are conceiving a child, but I'll leave that there.
What?
Holman also said family detention centers could play
what did she just say?
Deportation efforts.
I don't know. Run it back.
Did she just say that? She just tried to say.
To health care or birth control.
Hang on, let's just do that again. Hold on.
I think that there's going to be a rude awakening really on all sides.
There's also to me the idea that vulnerable women without access to health care or birth control may or may not be choosing whether or not they are conceiving a child, but I'll leave that there. Holman also said family detention centers could play a role in deportation efforts.
Okay.
And he added that those facilities would not be jails, but, quote, open-air campuses designed for families. I'm not sure access to fresh air was a lot of people's issue.
I wonder if they're
going to
have pools.
But I'm wondering
lawn chairs.
Right.
I'm curious to know if he's ever been to a jail or a prison. The reality is that these are nothing more than detention camps that look a lot like jails and prisons. I mean, obviously, there's what they call the yard when you go to a prison, and that is an open air facility. But, you know, there's always been a lack of humanity when it comes to immigration and this administration. If people remember the separation before, they may remember that, but they may not remember how much money it cost the United States when we were sued about the
You think she's a millionaire?
I have no idea.
Families themselves are really expensive.
Prospects. Right. We know, Texas is like, hey, we will go ahead and give you the land to do what you want to do. But we know that there takes officers, right? So we're talking about needing to hire more officers to execute this. We are talking about you can't just throw people into facilities. You've got to make sure that you feed them, got to make sure that you're keeping them healthy.
Right,
so what happens when you...
if you're talking about children and families
exactly.
as well.
Exactly. So it's going to cost us monetarily up front, but it's also going to cost us because we know, again, that so many of these people are actually contributing to our economy.
There's also this interesting...
Let's say you have a squatter.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want them at your house. You don't want them there. But they keep fixing your furniture.
Right. I keep repairing the AC when it breaks or, yeah.
But the thing is, when you cook your food, when you buy toilet tissue, when you buy paper towels,
mm-hmm.
when you get some Starbucks, they're going to want a little. So...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is that okay?
Right. Yeah, I don't know where she's coming from, but because the question is, should they be here? And if the answer is no, the question is, how do we exit them? How do we let them go? Right? How do we help them go back to where they're supposed to be? And the answer can't just be to just let them stay, give them citizenship, and let them, even. I don't know. What do you think? I mean, what are your...
I mean, it's a difficult thing. This is a situation that our leadership put us in. So
yes.
it's not a simple one-size-fits-all. I do like that they are starting with the the ones that have the criminal records. Go ahead and get them out.
Right.
The people that are good, upstanding citizens, there's got to be people who are going to be able to vouch for their worthiness, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know what the new administration's entire policy is. I understand they're going to deport a lot of the criminals first.
Mm-hmm.
And those who are undocumented need to be documented. And, mm-hmm. you know, I hear there's supposed to be 13 million exports, mm-hmm. people that they're trying to,
deport.
Sorry, I didn't mean to say export.
No, it's all good.
13 million people that they're going to deport.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like a huge undertaking. It's going to be very complicated. It's going to be a lot of resistance.
Yeah, especially if we don't have somewhere to send them. If the countries they come from don't want to take them back.
Right.
Right. I mean, we can use pressure as far as, you know, sanctions and stuff like that to encourage them to take them back. But in some situations, they were intentionally dumped here. Like, I think there have been situations in Venezuela where Venezuelans have been... criminals have been let out of jail and dumped, you know, brought up here. Situations like that, what are we going to do if the country doesn't want to take them back? You know, I mean, and apparently there was some sort of discussion. I saw an article that said something about the Trump administration trying to work out contingency plans for this situation where the country doesn't want to take them back. They were talking to, like, the Bahamas and Turks and Caicos and some of the countries down there about taking some of these people. But, I mean, that just seems like a weird proposition to me. Like, look, these people aren't your problem, but they're not our problem. And, you know, are we going to pay them to take care of the problem for us? And I don't know. But I mean, if they're criminals, if they've broken the law, I mean, the question is...
Gotta go?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, because do we want to introduce them to our prison population and take on the cost of having to take care of them while they're in prison? I mean, that doesn't seem like something we should be undertaking. Seems like we should just deport them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if that means we show them the border and say goodbye, I don't know. Admittedly, it's a complicated issue, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it makes me... 2025 is going to be,
mm-hmm.
I don't have the right way. I mean, it's going to be different.
Yeah, I don't know. And it's not just that. A lot's changing. I mean, arguably the whole geopolitical landscape is going to be in flux, right? Just changing the way a lot of things are being handled from the Ukrainian-Russian situation to the Israeli-Hamas situation to this, you know, our deportation situation. But that's not the only, this one in particular, the immigration issue touches so many other aspects of American economic challenges, you know, from sanctuary cities to cities that, you know, we have cities that have gone extremely liberal, which that's their right. You know, you get out to California and San Francisco, you know, they, as I understand it, drugs are legalized now and they're able to.
All drugs?
Yeah, that's my understanding. Let me fact check that.
Wow.
San Francisco.
So progressive.
Yeah, right. Drug laws. Yeah, so they have, this is it, Guide to Drug Laws in the San Francisco area. They've decriminalized. So drug laws are made at the federal, state, and local level. Local governments cannot simply ignore state and federal laws, but cities sometimes decriminalize certain things such as drugs, which means they choose not to prioritize enforcement of these laws. San Francisco, Santa Cruz, and Oakland have decriminalized mushrooms or psilocybin along with plant-based etheogenic hallucinogen drugs. And it wasn't just that. I saw there was more. It was progressive drug policies. Last year, 621 people died of drug overdoses in San Francisco. 173 people died from COVID. Let's see. For years, San Francisco has tacitly encouraged drug abuse with remarkably lenient policies. Those policies are now inadvertently killing hundreds of people annually. There are an estimated 25,000 drug users in San Francisco, which is, if anything, a low number. Yeah, I was looking for the specific. Mm-hmm. My understanding is that they had decriminalized. Let's see, San Francisco. Are drugs legal? Let's just do that. Are drugs legal? There's the drug policy.
You ever heard of the Farm Bill?
No, I don't think so. What is it?
So once we get through here, you can pull it up.
San Francisco Standard. Proposition 36, which allowed people convicted of non to receive a probationary sentence. I don't think this is what we're looking for. We're back in 2016 there. Let's just see. Okay, what does Wiki say about it? Let's see. So various classes and kinds of drugs. Cannabis possession has been legalized with the Adult Use of Marijuana Act in 2016. 2014, Proposition 47, reduced drug possession for personal use to a misdemeanor. There's alcohol, amphetamines, which is part of the safety code, is illegal for possession. Cannabis is legal, just covered that. Crack cocaine, Schedule 2, illegal. Heroin, illegal to possess. Ketamine is illegal. MDMA is illegal. Okay, so Schedule 1, psilocybin is Schedule 1. Yeah, so okay, so it's not just an outright legalization, mm-hmm. as I had heard. But the point is they decriminalized a number of it, a number of drugs, and it's led to a massive problem with regard to drug use.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are parts of town where there are people that are just doing drugs openly, and it's, yeah, some of these are rough. Mm. Look at this. Let's skip this ad real fast. Well, but yeah, some of these are hard to watch from what I've seen.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen the clips of Skid Row and
yeah.
people zombified and bent over.
Yeah, just wandering around. But yeah. And let's see. Pictures speak louder than words. Yeah. Open drug use. There we go.
Open drug use in San Francisco's South of Market area has become predictable. Drug users nodding off, shooting up, or smoking fentanyl is a matter of course for residents living near 8th and Mission Streets.
I started filming things, and at first I wasn't even going to, I didn't know what I was going to do with the video. Get home safe, okay?
Richie Wynn finally posted a video showing a group of kids getting off a muni bus as they tried to navigate their way through an entire
wow.
block of That's open drug use. 3 days after he posted the video, we found that nothing had changed. Wynn was not surprised.
There's kind of like a lot of madness going on down here.
At one point, we had to pause the interview because we were interrupted by a man yelling at us. ABC 7 News first brought this block to your attention last March as part of our ongoing coverage of the problems that plague the nearby Tenderloin District.
This is what I do every day. I walk them to school because of safety.
Today we witnessed how hard it is for the city to push drug users into rehab.
I don't use drugs, so I don't understand. How hard is it to get help, to reach out and get help?
Well, see, ma'am, the thing with programs are meant for failure.
I asked him if he had tried to stop using drugs.
I try my own program. My own program is love.
Around midday, a paramedic came to help clear the area so that city workers could clean the sidewalk. For many, the drug crisis has become unacceptable.
Number one, close the open drug scenes. They're helping no one. They're not helping the users. They're not helping the community.
How do you close them?
Well, you have to use law enforcement.
But Ellen Grants of Moms Against Drug Deaths says it doesn't have to be punitive. Instead, the city should put more money into treatment.
These little kids got to walk through this shit. This shit is crazy.
Wynn, on the other hand, says the city needs to target the drug dealers. Otherwise, users will never get help.
And when they're getting sworn by drug dealers.
So the point is just, the point I'm making is there are tons of other issues that we have, that this touches, you know, this isn't a direct result, obviously, of immigration policies. There is a component to it, right, that has a corollary, at least with the ease of getting drugs across the southern border for the cartels. But still, I mean, we have a lot of issues we have to address here at home. And that, in my mind, that starts touching on things like how do we allow so much money to be going overseas or to other countries? Now, I get there are situations where people need financial aid and support, but we need financial aid and support here at home as well. There are plenty of homeless or unhoused, or however we're supposed to say it these days, people here in the States. A lot of them are veterans that need support, and I think we need to focus on getting them that support, personally.
I agree.
So.
100%. So I mentioned the farm bill earlier, and if you pull it up, it was something that Trump and Mitch McConnell
USDA?
Sort of brought into existence.
Is it USDA or?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to go. Let's see if we just
sustainable agriculture.
Yeah, there you go. Sustainable agriculture. Basically, what this made possible is for farmers to grow hemp.
Mm-hmm.
Technically, with science, you can figure out loopholes with things, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they passed this to allow farmers to legally grow hemp products, and technically there are stages to hemp, whether a hemp product graduates to actually contain THC.
Mm-hmm.
So with this farm bill being in place, growers have figured out that they can actually sell legal plant that does not contain THC, but in effect contains something else called THCA.
Mm-hmm.
It's a technicality.
Mm-hmm.
This plant technically does the same thing as regular weed,
mm-hmm.
But it's legal and it's sold everywhere.
Well, that happens here. The same thing has happened here in Tennessee as well. There's they call it Delta 8. And there's Delta 10 as well. The weed that most people smoke is Delta 9. And it's essentially, as I understand it, it's like a left-handed, right-handed molecule type thing. So they're essentially growing hemp that has been genetically modified to produce THC. And it, you're right, it kind of gets around it, but you can go down to the store down the street right now and buy a bag of weed. And it's not as strong as normal marijuana is, but it does the same thing.
Well, that's debatable.
Because
mm-hmm. they say normal marijuana it shouldn't be as strong as what they're selling today.
Right.
Like they say, right. You know, they would smoke it and just mm-hmm. be fine. They
it didn't used to. Yeah, back in the 60s and 70s and 80s, it wasn't anything like it was today, like it is today.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'd get like 10, 12% THC content. Now they're They're growing weed at
30,
even 40. Double that. Yeah, even 50, 60. As a matter of fact, they've even turned, like, I call it weapons grade marijuana, which is like the wax, right? Where you're basically freebasing marijuana byproduct. And it's that's like 60, 70% THC.
Dab.
Dabs. There you go. That's right. I'm not as familiar with it, but
I've never done it.
Yeah, I don't smoke, but it, that's how you can now go buy marijuana or edibles. And if you go into one of the stores here, they just have, you know, like a wall with shelves of marijuana sitting on it, and it's getting around it the same way. So that's the farm bill. Is what you're saying?
Yeah, the farm bill.
Interesting.
Allowed. So yeah, there's farmers in Tennessee that got grants so they could participate.
Huh. Judge halts Tennessee rules that would ban hemp products. So a Tennessee judge has temporarily blocked new hemp testing regulations that were set to take effect last week, which could ban products legally sold in the state since 2019. Did a temporary injunction on December 23rd. When was this? This was today. So Davidson County Chancellor issued the temporary injunction on the 23rd of December, pausing the rules until February 18th to allow further review. Chandler Miles stressed that expert testimony and further evidence were necessary regarding the proprietary reasonableness and lawfulness of the regulations, which included the new threshold restrictions on the levels of THC and THCA found in hemp-derived products. At stake is the sale of hemp products, which have been legally available since 2019. The new regulations call for hemp products to be tested for their THCA content, a compound found in all hemp plants that turns into THC when heated or smoked. Those regulations would make many hemp products illegal and decimate the state's growing hemp industry, according to associations and companies. So, yeah, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, so we'll see. We'll see what happens in February. I mean,
you think it should be legal?
For adults, yeah.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Of course, yeah. We're definitely talking about for adults.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But not for kids.
No, definitely not. No, I have three teenagers that say I don't smoke. But the idea that we allow alcohol and we prohibit marijuana has always blown my mind, because of the two, alcohol is definitely the worst, the significantly more dangerous drug of the two of those. But that said, you know, there was this massive campaign in the 50s and 60s by the U.S. government to demonize marijuana, you know, the whole calling it a gateway drug thing. And in a lot of ways, they made it a gateway drug, right? They made it so that you had to go find some dude named Tiny Tim with three AK-47s hanging on his wall selling you anything you want to get marijuana, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was definitely a gateway, because the guy that the only person you could get it from was also the guy selling heroin and whatever else. Yep. So, yeah, definitely I could see the argument. But as far as where it's at today, I think a lot of people look at it and go, okay, you know, it's probably not as bad as we suspected. You know, traffic fatalities haven't gone through the roof. You know, the crime hasn't gone through the roof. It's been legal for a while now. I think that we might be on the precipice of finally legalizing it, which, you know, I'm not someone that benefits from it. It's not a good substance for me. But there are people that I know that it does a lot for, right?
Yeah.
That it's been a lifesaver for. And so, I was very adamant about this. I'm prior military. So back in the day, I used to be very, like, zero tolerance approach to this. Mm-hmm. The biggest reason was I wasn't going to go to jail for it, right? And I was like, so I would, if you had it in my car, I'd be like, no. And like, you can get out or it gets out. I don't care how it happens. I'm, you know, no. That was me 20 years ago. I've relaxed a little bit today, because now it's legal. It's different, but it's something we have to prepare our kids for too, right? And I've had to explain to my kids, look, you know, when you get older, it's your choice, but until your brain stops forming, I suggest you stay away from it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's been signs that studies that have shown that youth that take it, it does something to them. Like, it you know, limits their development. So, and that's why, a kid should not, I'm sorry, I'm kicking everything.
You're good.
But yeah, I mean, that's why I agree. Kids should not have access to any sort of controlled substances, alcohol, access to, you know, do all sorts of things.
Any psychoactives, really. Yeah. I think drugs are something that we can debate whether an adult that has finished growing and whether it's something they want to do, that's their choice and their prerogative. But, and I could probably make that argument for most drugs, honestly. I think there's a social component to it. Insofar as if we just legalized every drug known to man, right, then there would probably be a social cost. I think we're seeing that, like we were just talking about in San Francisco. But,
and then you got to admit, too, a lot of those people who are strung out on drugs, there's more than just an addiction. There's other things going on.
Sure.
Like, there's, I mean, it's mental, as a mental element there. Like, a lot of them need more than just rehab. They need to see professionals that deal with mental health.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's unfortunate. A lot of people that are on the street like that, they just don't have anywhere to go. Their families
don't want to deal with it anymore.
Maybe they don't want to deal with it. Maybe they don't have any family members that want to deal, that they know of exists, you know. They're out on their own. Maybe they took a huge risk and it knocked them off their feet.
Right.
But it's that everything is slightly different, need slightly help, different help. There definitely needs to be some sort of checks and balances to see where they are mentally.
Right.
And how they can be helped that way and reintroduced into society.
Right. Well, I don't know why we haven't voted on this, right? This feels like something we should have voted on already. But honestly, I would have voted in favor of legalizing. But again, and that's coming from somebody who has no interest in using the drug. I just don't think it's necessary. And I think that there are more benefits to taxation and to regulation, right? Mm-hmm. Rather than just letting it be anything you find off the street that could be mixed with anything. And, you know, I think there's a lot of benefits to legalizing it. But
reminds me of my neighbor.
Yeah.
So before, I have a dog now, but before I got my dog, I was asking him, I was like, are you going to get a dog? He's like, I don't think my wife will want me to get a dog.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks later, I asked him about it. He's like, you know what? The way you win the dog argument is you bring the dog home.
Right.
So this stuff is, as far as marijuana, CBD, they brought the dog home.
Right.
We see it.
Right. And it's not as bad as everybody that was on the opposing side of it was saying it would be, I don't think. But
And then the source from which you would buy it from, traditionally, that is a dangerous element.
Mm-hmm.
But if it is commercialized and taxed and coming from safe sources, then you remove that risk.
Right. And that's been going on for a while in states where it's been legalized, like California or Colorado, Maryland, I believe, Virginia.
Washington.
Washington, yeah. There are a number of states that have
DC.
Legalized. Yeah, but it's, again, I just go back to that. I don't personally put marijuana in the same drug class as like, I don't think it should be a scheduled drug, right? It shouldn't be up there with crack cocaine or cocaine or heroin. I think it's a different substance. And it's one that arguably has been used for a long time. Now, the challenge with that is, like you mentioned, I think it is dangerous for kids. It's highly psychoactive. I think if you have some underlying mental conditions or mental predispositions, it can blur the line between reality and imagination, right? It can definitely prove to be a disservice for people. But there are also people, and I think it's particularly people who tend to be fairly high stress, more, I don't want to say this negatively, but more neurotic, you know, high stress, the micromanagers of the world, the people who are intent on managing every detail and tend to be, as a result, tend to be much higher stress individuals. I think that marijuana is a drug that was made for those people, right? Like it was, it serves those, it seems to serve those people well, because it seems to bring them down to a chill level that I thankfully appreciate every day. Whereas if I were to use marijuana, it sends me the exact opposite direction. It makes me paranoid and anxious and not, it's not a good look, and it's not a good feeling. I just don't enjoy it. So,
yeah. Well, there are different strains that
of course
cause different reactions.
Of course.
So.
And that's true. That's true. And I'm not trying to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I've learned that it's not for me. But.
Same. Yeah. It's not for me either.
Yeah. I prefer to be clear-headed. You know, it just makes me feel dulled, and it just doesn't do me any favors. So, but you know, to each their own. Well, we've been going for a minute. Why don't we go ahead and wrap? And thank you very much for joining us. You have anything else you wanted to touch on before we conclude?
Oh, I'm sure there's more. There's going to be more to come, but
it's okay. We can jump on the other side of the paywall too. We can do a little closer if you want. But but thank you very much. Shout out to Derek. Sorry you couldn't join us tonight.
Yeah.